'Twas the week before Christmas and the three wise women bring their gifts of updates on the GP contract, the fiscal framework and McLeod remedy.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this festive episode of Accountancy on Prescription. I'm Katie Singer, one of the partners here at RBP, and I'm joined by both of my fellow partners, Jenny Stone and Kate Perry. Hi, guys.
Hi, Katie.
Today, we have decided we'd shake it up a bit, do something a little bit more upbeat, a little bit festive with Christmas just around the corner. I'm actually not sure when this is being aired. It must be just the week before Christmas, I think.
Yeah, Katie, I think it is.
Perfect. So we were reflecting actually before we all jumped on, and we were saying how this time last year we recorded a festive podcast and it was so doom and gloom, wasn't it?
It was. I think we've had anything good to talk about.
Last year, for those of you who did listen and who survived the year 2022-23, you'll know that it was such a tough year. And everybody reflected back on it thinking, gosh, could general practice get any worse? But as the three wise women of Christmas, we are going to be bringing you lots more upbeat news for the coming year. So I am kicking things off. I am carrying with me gold representing the GP contract. So as I mentioned a minute ago, the year before last, was really doom and gloom. All three of us reflected after every time we'd see a client, gosh, that meeting was so terrible. Their profits have fallen. We had to give some real tough love advice to the practices, you know, spending too much, not receiving enough in. And the three of us, I think we'll all agree, I was genuinely concerned.
Yeah, it was really hard last year. And I just felt like I was continuously delivering bad news until, of course, we got to the tax and people were getting tax refunds. But it was really difficult last year seeing practices because so many practices were struggling.
Yes, I've found the same. It was a difficult time last year.
And we started the year back in April 2023, started that new year with a £2.84 uplift in the global sum. Okay, £2.84 was a few pence more than it had been for the last few years, but we all knew that just wasn't going to cut it. Then the DDRB announced that there was to be an uplift in all staff pay of 6%. Well, that was the recommendation anyway. So the year before it had been 4.5%, and this year it was a recommended 6%. Now, those of you who know, the £2.84 you'd received at the beginning of the year was just over 2%. How on earth were you going to give a further, you know, a 6% pay rise on top of the 2% you were given? Thankfully, NHS England got together, sat down around the table and awarded a further £2.45. So in total, you were given just over £5 for the year, which made a huge difference. And it was the biggest increase in global sum we have seen for years. Now, we all know it didn't quite cut giving a 6% pay rise. But what it did do is just close the gap between having less income in and having to pay more out in expenses. So although that in itself didn't quite bridge the gap, what I saw, and maybe the two of you will be the same, I saw huge increases in the income coming from PCNs. Whether it was money from PCNs from the year before and the year before that wasn't distributed, things like the IIS and late surplus fund, or whether it was just more money, the capacity and access pot, we had the enhanced access, yes. All of these contracts that are just higher value. Probably you're all listening thinking, yeah, more work, Katie. So more work for sure, but more funding available. And that, coupled with the increase in global sum, coupled with most practices having listened to us tell them how awful it was the year before, cutting costs where they could, for example, trimming the fat a little bit on staff, looking where they could, saving costs, has meant that the profit for the year to March 24 was so much better. I think you two would agree.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that mine were much, much better, but much better than my predictions, for sure. But I always worry about with these uplifts that, yes, it's covered their costs, but our poor GPs haven't actually had a pay uplift themselves. That's where I think they always seem to fall down the cracks, and I think they're falling down again, but I'll speak about that later.
Yeah, and I think for me, Katie, I know when I started this year, I was expecting profits for 2023-24 to be down because, like you said, there wasn't enough funding to cover the staff pay rises. But it's definitely been a much better year. And I agree, most of my clients have had an increase in profits, which I think is mainly down to PCN income. So like you said, more money coming through, enhanced access, if money. And one of the changes that I saw that also made quite a big difference was the ARS roles. So I think, you know, a number of practices, quite a few of my practices, rebadged some of their admin staff into care coordinators. So that staff cost was essentially saved because it was being funded. And I think that also made a considerable difference. Having said that, those practices where their PCNs seem to contract everything out to federations or they don't get a lot of money are still struggling because the reality of it is like you say, the global sum uplift for 23-24 wasn't enough to cover increases in minimum wage and the 6% pay rise. So for some practices, they are still struggling because they don't get very much from their PCN. I've got a practice that only gets from their PCN participation.
Yes, I've got a couple of those too.
Yeah, and they're the ones that are still struggling. Nothing. Yeah. So I think the reason I think that practices have had a good year is, like you say, Katie, it's all down to the PCN funding.
And actually, just moving on from what you two just said, I think for the last few years with PCNs, we've sort of bumbled through. Some of the funding was quite low. If practices weren't getting paid out the maximum they possibly could, it probably didn't make a huge difference. I know now when I go to practices, I'm quite, I would say, pushy. I ask them lots of questions about their PCN income and they'll often say, why are you asking all these questions? And I say, well, I'm looking down your list and like your practice you mentioned, Jen, all you've got is PCN participation. That's it. There's nothing else on the list. Where's your enhanced access? Where's your capacity and access? Where's your IAF funding? Where's your share of the surplus? Where's your care home? Where's your this? Where's your that? And they look at me blankly and go, oh, well, that's all kept by the PCN. And I say, yeah, but you are the PCN or you're at least a share of it, and that money is supposed to come back to you now. I always caveat this where, and it's usually the case in these practices where their PCN funding is lower, often their local commissioned income is very high. And what's happening is it's all being put in a big pot. You know, a local federation or network is receiving all the money in, and it is coming back to the practices, but I think now is the time that it needs to be more transparent. I don't think there should just be big pots. There needs to be clear distinction between what's PCN and what's locally commissioned services income. Because there are, as you said, there are practices missing out. And it's getting to the point now where unless you're able to get your PCN income in, you are going to struggle.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's more the case, Katie, where the PCNs are being looked after by a federation. I find that it's normally those PCNs where the money sort of dissipate somehow within the federation and their accounts aren't always that clear cut. As you say, you should really see all the funding streams coming in and going out in separate sort of cost centres, if you like.
And I think as well, we know that when we were dealing with federations and they held the access contract, it was a very profitable contract. So if the PCN is being responsible for running enhanced access and that contract, you would expect there to be quite a bit of surplus sitting in the PCN, which should be paid over to the practices.
Agreed. So just something to take away. If you're finding that you're not getting that much out of the PCN, but you're hearing us say, well, there should be lots. And I mean, I would say on average, it doubled, if not tripled this year. So if you're thinking, oh, that's interesting, we didn't have any difference or we had less or we just got PCN participation, it's definitely worth asking the questions. We're not to say you're not getting it in the round some other way, but it just needs to make sure that you are getting the maximum you could possibly get. So we had that, and that was really positive. And actually, leading into the coming year, so last year, there was £5 uplift. We know the current year that we're living in, the increase is £7.77 in your global sum. Again, to, in theory, cover a 6% pay rise, which it should just about cover, but that doesn't leave much less in the pot for the partners or the owners of the practice. So there won't be a 6% pay rise, we don't think, for partners. But again, it will all depend on how the year goes with other income. So we always do those of you who are our clients, you know, you're familiar with our drawings projections. They're usually very conservative. I'm always very relieved when I see I go and see a practice the following year and they've exceeded my projection. Obviously, it's not great for that partner's tax bill, but it's always nice for me to know, oh, actually, the profits are better than my cautious projection was. So this coming year, so the year to March 25, obviously, we've only got a few months left of it. I'm really hopeful that there will be some uplifts in partners' pay. Finally, after, I think we did a podcast earlier this year, didn't we, Jen? And we talked that true GP partners haven't had a pay rise in 6 years or something.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm hoping as well, like you, Katie, that partners will see an increase because obviously they did, when they made that DDRB announcement in the summer, they did say that they wanted not just NHS staff, but partners as well to have 6%. But as you know, when we've crunched the numbers, that doesn't necessarily mean, depending on your level of staff cost, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get 6%. But it'll be interesting to see because last year I was expecting profits to be down and they were up. So I'm hoping that my prediction of I'm hoping profits will be up for 24-25 doesn't mean that they'll all be down, but let's see.
I think we've trained them well now. The ones that were overspending before saw the benefit of not overspending. And we know it's tough. We know patient demand through the roof has been for the last few years, but it's just keeping a handle on those.
And I think one of the other trends that I saw this year for 23-24 that made a big difference was the drop in locums. And we know that locums have been struggling to find work because they're saying with all the Arswells expanded, it has resulted in them spending less and probably not helped by the year before us going and saying, you need to cut down on your locums, your profits have dropped. So that also, I think, contributed to profits being up this year.
Yes, I certainly saw clients making a real impact on their locum costs and trying to make sure that they really only called them in when absolutely necessary. And a lot of my clients are looking at how they manage sickness within the surgery and try and share things around. So that has made, I think you're right, for me, that has made a big difference.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen the same. And I think, I remember I must have been about 4 years ago seeing lots of practices and thinking, locums have really got some control here. They've got power. And I remember thinking, I really hope, sorry for those of you who are listening who are full-time locums, but I really hope that something tips and the locums who are in control, something tilts them off skew because GP practices are going to go under if they can't get a handle on this. And yet, luckily, the R scheme has come by and has sort of pushed them off their pedestal a little bit. And you know, of course, there's always going to be a need for locums, but it was the use of what we would consider not locums, you know, regular individuals who have just decided they want to be locums because they can get paid more for doing so.
Yes.
And that is not the nature of a locum.
Yeah, I think at the height of it, Katie, I had practices saying to me, locums were charging £1,000 a day because they were so in demand when there was such a shortage. And now I've had practices say to me, our locums have reduced their rates because they're struggling to find work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy in the world of how much demand there is in the NHS that we've got doctors struggling to find work. But yeah.
The cost crisis, you know, if practices can't afford it, they're not going to pay.
Just talking about the R's, what have your clients talked about the new R's money for GPs? I know mine sort of haven't really considered it at all because they just think the amount's too small, it's not going to be a viable option.
So I had a conversation with someone about this week. So the funding doesn't quite make sense to me. So for this year that we're living in, for 24-25, the PCNs, I believe, this month or last month, have received a year's worth of funding, but just in a 6 month period. So in theory, what they have is, let's just use numbers, they're getting £20,000 to spend over 6 months, which is fine, lovely. But then when next year rolls round, they've got £20,000, which is a whole year, to spend over 12 months.
Yes.
They can't employ somebody for 6 months on 20 grand. They can only spend half of that because it's only 6 months. So what happens to the other amount of money? None of this makes any sense. So I'll be honest, I've had a couple of conversations with lots of PCNs and other, some of the listeners will know that I sit on the ICAW healthcare committee, so other accountants who all in medical field, and we've all discussed how a lot of our clients have just said, well, we're not going to use it, we're actually going to end up losing it, which is how we know a lot of the R's roles go, which is such a waste.
Yes,
a waste of time and money.
I don't think it was really thought through at all properly, because I haven't had any client who's
I've had one conversation. Yeah, I had one conversation with one practice. And other than that, I haven't had any conversations about it. So, yeah.
It's not a very practical pot either. It's newly qualified, if I believe.
It's newly qualified.
And it's very restrictive, and it can only be used within the PCN. And obviously, it's such a small amount of funding that it's not really going to be able to get their teeth stuck into any patients, because the PCNs have 35,000-40,000 patients. So, I'm not sure I fully understood the rationale behind it. But again, it, like a lot of things in the NHS, they have to put a headline in, you know, and this was a headline. Well, new GP.
Yeah, sounded good, didn't it?
Mm. Like a lot of things within the PCN, they sound great on paper. Some things do work excellently, and other things, as we know, they just don't. So having looked at the last year, I think that's a nice way for me to lead on to my next wise woman, carrying frankincense to represent the fiscal future. So, Kate, do you want to lead us through?
Yes. So what a budget. This was, I think, not really what people expected. Half of us perhaps thought that taxes somewhere would go up, but certainly not in the manner in which it was actually rolled out in the end. So what we have got, of course, the biggest impact, I think, for our clients is going to be the employer national insurance increase. Mm. So we've got various levels at where this increases. So we are doing a Christmas newsletter, so there will be more details in that. And so I'm not going to go through it in a lot of detail, but perhaps we can have some comments. So there were three main areas. So we've got the 1.2% increase from 13.8 to 15% on all employer national insurance contributions. We have the drop of when it kicks in. So it used to kick in at 9,100, and now it's going to kick in at 5,000. So that pulls a whole load of new staff into this cost, and that represents about £615 a patient. And then the other thing that also has an impact on salaries is going to be the increase in the living wage. So obviously lots of our clients have quite low earning staff with all their reception staff, so they already had a hit last year with the increase in the living wage, and it's gone up yet again. So it represented last year about 9%. This year it's going to represent a similar amount. So there are hits all around. And just in case anyone's not clear, what Rachel Reeves was saying is, oh, well, it's not going to affect people that much, although in fact it does, because of the increase in the employer's allowance. So the employer's allowance is something that most small businesses can obtain. And she said that's increased from 5,000 to 10,000. But unfortunately, for our doctors' practices, they're considered as government bodies, and therefore they're not eligible for that. Now, the hospitals have got some sort of reimbursement, or they're going to be covered for that, but there's been no word whatsoever about GPs specifically. So what we are hoping for, and just to remind people, none of this kicks in until 6th of April next year. But as always, we try to look ahead and try and give advance notice to our clients. So what we are desperately hoping is that the DDRB are looking at this, and that their recommended uplift is going to include a significant percentage increase to cover these additional costs. I mean, I don't know what your clients have been saying to you since.
Yeah, I mean, I've been running numbers as I've been going around to practices, and the rate going up doesn't seem to cost that much. The issue is the threshold. And what I say to clients is, I say, just look at how many employees you've got on your payroll and just multiply that by £615. And that is where the significant cost is coming from. Agreed, Kate, that obviously the budget sort of said, oh, NHS would be protected. But for whatever reason, GP practices seem to not be part of the NHS family, which seems absolute madness.
They're
NHS GPs.
Well, they are, of course, this strange animal, aren't they?
Independent provider status, which the government clearly doesn't like. And so I have had a call from a client who was very worried about the cost of the national insurance, but also the minimum wage going up yet again. And we ran and did a whole load of numbers. And actually, the comment they made to me is, they said the practice down the road has already made a member of staff redundant on the basis of this sudden increase in costs that they're going to bear. So, you know, we're kind of expecting, finally, like Katie said, we've had a great increase in the global sum this year, but kind of You'll see that for 24-25, but unless they put the global sum up by enough to cover this employer's national insurance, this is going to be a big cost for practices.
Well, I've found the whole year, since they did the DDRB recommendation in August, and then, of course, from that point onwards, practices were asking, can we afford it? So we had to wait until NHS England announced that they were giving an additional amount into the global sum. So once we knew that the global sum was going to be going up, we were able to comfortably do a calculation and say, look, can you afford 6%, i.e. yes. I know not all of our practices did give a 6% pay rise, even though that was the intention. It is discretionary unless you have salaried doctors on the DMA contract. But ultimately, the whole point of it was to allow a 6%. The issue then happened is a lot of practices gave the 6% or they were thinking of doing it. The budget was then announced on the last day in October, and they're saying to me, Katie, can we afford to give the 6% in light of the budget? So difficult, because the 6% is for last year, the budget is for next year.
Yeah.
So, of course, yes, you can afford to give it based on last year's numbers, but in reality, can you afford to give it with the increase in the NI, et cetera, et cetera? Probably it's going to be tight. So we need to make, well, I say we need, like we've got any power, but we really are hoping that the global sum next year, if it's up £7.77 this year, it's going to need to be up something like £10 a patient next year to be able to actually cover it. And I think that is the bit that I'm nervous about. So, of course, I've told all my clients, yeah, of course, you can give it. Because everything we do is retrospective. It's so challenging. Most of the numbers I've run have been at least 25,000 to 30,000 is going to be this national insurance hit.
Yeah. And do you know what, Katie? I've had some practices I've seen recently that just had never got round to doing the pay uplifts following the DDRB announcement. And because now I kind of run the numbers for them and I'm running what employers' NI's costing them, it's making them rethink what they can actually afford to give, like you said, which it should be for 24-25, because they know they've got this cost coming. They don't know they're going to get the extra through the global sum. So they're being very careful about what they're giving, because I think, you know, there are some practices that are really worried. And it's not just the employer's national insurance, it's the minimum wage going up as well. Mm. So we've had already, have we had 2 years of it going up by 9%? And then I think it works out 7 or 8% again for next year. Mm-hmm. And we know that for most of that, the practices haven't been funded for that increase.
Yeah, it's 25% over 3 years minimum wage.
Yes, it's huge. Yes.
And most of my clients have made noises that that's really where their costs are lying. Because quite a lot of the reception staff are younger staff. And of course, the lower age, that's going up even more for the 18 to 21 year olds.
So, yes.
And yeah, I think the, such an impact.
And I think the other problem with the minimum wage keep going up by so much is it's the gap between the reception staff or minimum wage and the people that sit just above it. That gap has obviously shrunk. So, of course, practices are like, well, we now need to put our secretaries up by more than this to keep the gap. So it's not just staff or minimum wage. It's also the fact that those staff are getting closer to the people that sit just above them that also then causes a problem. So, yeah,
I think that's absolutely right. That is one of the major problems, that it has this sort of knock-on effect all the way up the scale. So, yeah, it's quite a difficult one to navigate, really.
And although inflation's coming down, costs are still going up. You know, so all of your services, or your telephone, your heating and lighting, your cleaning, your repairs and maintenance, all of those costs are still going to be up.
Mortgage interest rates, they haven't really fallen. They've dropped, then they picked up again. And then they've dropped by about 1%. This is the mortgage, not the bank base rate, but the mortgage interest rate. So I'm not sure that's going to change. I've just seen a set of accounts where their mortgage has almost doubled. So that's had a massive impact, as well as the heat and light. So anyone having come out of their fixed contract, that's had a massive impact as well. So just sticking with the budget, just for another few points that may be relevant to some of our clients. Those who've got second homes or want to buy second homes, and this will include anyone with buy-to-lets, the stamp duty's gone up. That actually went up the day after budget from 3% to 5%. We all know, of course, and some of our clients probably do have children at private schools, so those costs have gone up. Some of the good things, though, and some people might be wondering, is what we used to call the entrepreneur's relief, that's now called business asset disposal. We were worried that there might be an attack on that, and actually there hasn't been. So anyone selling property, having recently retired, so trying to sell off their share of the practice property in retirement, that relief is still available. What has happened, however, it's currently and will be until 5th of April at 10%. It means your capital gain on the property can be reduced with this relief down to 10%. But then after 6th of April, it will increase to 14%. And the following year, I think it's 18%. So that's something else to keep in mind. But at least they didn't take it away, because I think that was the main worry. So we've got the same fiscal drag because all the tax rates and bans, none of these changed. Unfortunately, I've got lots of clients who are caught in the £100,000 trap. So remember, this year, tax went up to the higher rate as soon as you went over into the 125 band. So you got hit with losing your personal allowance, then immediately you went into the higher rate band. But then I've got a lot of younger clients who are getting caught by going over the 100,000 for the childcare.
Yeah.
So that's really significant. I had a conversation with one of my consultants recently, and he said, well, look, you know, I'm seriously considering not doing any overtime this Christmas, because for any pound over the 100,000, he could lose £7,000 in childcare.
Yeah, it's quite significant.
It is. And I think they really, really, I noticed that the BMA have highlighted this, but it's a real issue. And I don't think they've realised the impact that it's having.
Yeah.
And it's the consultants, those sort of younger consultants, who are probably the ones who are going to most likely to do the overtime at Christmas. And they're sort of thinking, well, you know, why am I going to work harder and end up with less money in my pocket?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know how they're going to resolve that one, because that's a really tough one. You know, do they do something only for doctors? And I always think that's a bit of a risky thing to do. But there we go.
And they didn't touch pensions, which was a relief for everybody in the budget.
Yeah.
Because I think people were worried about lifetime limit coming in or the lump sum being taxed. So they actually finally left pensions alone for this budget.
Yes, that was a relief. The one thing that did come in, however, is those with private pensions. Probably not a lot of our clients, but some people may have had private pensions. And the private pension relief, where if you left your money in a pension and passed away, that would not sit in your estate. So
yes,
unfortunately, that has changed. So
yes,
if you have any funds in a private pension, unfortunately, they will fall immediately into your estate now. But that was the only impact, really. And they didn't change the company car tax particularly. So electric cars are still
the same tax breaks.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and I always recommend this to our younger clients, is ISAs. So that's still a benefit of putting your savings into ISAs. So while the rates are much less, remember, you don't have to disclose the interest for income tax. Because I was wondering whether they might look at that as well, but they haven't. And the same for anyone even younger, a LISA, Lifetime Individual Savings Allowance, and that can help if you haven't yet bought your first house. You can get some extra savings there because you put in £4,000 and the government will give you another £1,000. So that's certainly worth it. And worth it for any of our older clients who have young children who've just coming out of university, getting their first job. LISAs are a good bet as well.
Well, I guess that last comment Jenny made about pension leads us nicely to the third wise woman carrying MER. MER standing for our hot topic of the moment, that if I hear another time, my head might pop off, is McLeod. So Jenny, lead us through it.
I know. There doesn't seem to be a podcast we could do without mentioning McLeod. And actually, we're probably all sick of it now, aren't we? But you know what? It's Christmas, Katie. And McLeod, hopefully, is a gift to people, because whenever I talk about McLeod to clients, they suddenly actually are really happy about it. I'm hoping everybody listening knows exactly what McLeod is. But let me just quickly go back and explain that the pensions agents, it's public service. So all public service pensions, the 2015 scheme got bought in. Most people got moved over over to the 2015 scheme, which has a retirement age of 67 on the 1st of April 15, but there were some protected members that never moved over. And as a result, there was a court case by Judge McLeod who said this is all age discrimination, and they were successful. And as a result, we have what we refer to as the McLeod remedy. What this means is that your pension benefits from the 1st of April 15 to 31st of March 22 will actually get rolled back to the original scheme you were in. So if you were in the 95 or in the 2008, it gets rolled back to that scheme. So the reason, Katie, why I say this is a lovely Christmas gift is clients are usually happy because it does mean that they've got 7 years of pension benefits that they can get a lot earlier than they would have otherwise. However, the result of this means, although I say to clients, there's nothing you need to do, the rollback has already happened. So again, when you're looking at your pension statements, this now reflects the rollback of those 7 years. So you don't need to do anything from that respect. But unfortunately, for us accountants, for clients to be aware of, there is a massive piece of work that has to be done with respect to updating annual allowance tax charges. So if you had an annual allowance tax charge for any of those 7 years, that you will have reported to HMRC, you may have paid the tax yourself, you may have done scheme pay elections, all of those numbers will have changed. And we now need to update HMRC with that information, and then scheme pay elections that will have been done will be updated. So we wrote to clients to say you should be getting an RPSS statement. So that's the remediable pension saving statement. So these started to get issued in October. I think we've had about 100 in so far, which is a fraction of what we're expecting. So I've had lots of clients emailing me going, Jenny, I still haven't had my statement. I'm getting worried. And I say, don't worry. It's being sent out in batches. So you can't request one from NHS Pensions. They are sending them. However, I think another reason for the delay is there were errors on the original batch that went out. So for any clients that sent us their remedial pension saving statement, the reason you haven't heard from us is because we're kind of waiting to see, were you one of the ones that had an error? So what NHS Pension Agency have said, and it's literally, we're kind of always on tenterhooks, aren't we, waiting for what this update's going to be. But finally, we've got an update to say that the NHS Pension Agency are expecting 90% of people that were affected by the errors will have an updated RPSS by the 16th of December. There is a small number who are affected, though I think it's a lot more complicated, the errors. And so what they've said is they're hoping to send final replacement RPSSs by the end of February. And what they're saying is if you're affected, they'll write to you by the 16th of December to say to you, your RPSS was wrong. They can't send you one now, but they will send it to you in due course. What I would say is we've had some amended RPSSs, and of all the ones that we've had through at the moment, we check them to the original and none of the numbers are different. I have yet to see an amended RPSS that is different to the one we had originally. So I think we've been saying, haven't we? We don't know whether, have they just sent all of them out again? So we don't know. So what we're doing here, all year we've been planning for this work. At the moment, if you've sent us your RPSS statement, we are doing kind of all the preparation work for it. But the whole thing with using HMRC's digital tool is you can't save any of the data. So we're not entering anything onto HMRC's digital tool or submitting it until we've kind of know that the data we've got from you is correct. So the likelihood is we're not going to be submitting anything until January. To give us a chance, you know, if they're saying you're going to hear by the 16th of December, it's posted, there's bound to be delays with Christmas post. So I suspect we won't start sending out RPSSs to clients, sort of confirming what the details will be, until probably the new year. If you haven't had your RPSS, don't worry. Loads of clients still haven't had them. Although the deadline is 31st of January 25, you basically have 3 months from the date of your RPSS. So if you don't get an RPSS until January, you're not expected to get that, all that information filed by the end of Jan. You will have 3 months from that date. So yeah, and as I said, you can't request them. You've just got to wait until it comes out. about. What I've been saying to a lot of clients is make sure your pension record is up to date. The reason the pension agency won't be able to send you an RPSS is if you've got missing superannuation certificates. So if you've got any cases that you've had from PCSE that you haven't got resolved, let us know. We are trying to work really hard on getting missing certificates submitted. I kind of feel like with PCSE, they do go into a bit of a black hole. So when we do your accounts, we will check whether your certificates have been all processed. But again, do make sure if you've had cases from PCSE, you're forwarding them to us straight away so that we can action them and get them sorted. I was also going to say one of the other things that I've been recommending to clients is to get an AA and service extract from NHS Pensions, because this allows you to check whether all your data is correct. They'd stopped issuing these, but I can see that they've started again. So again, if you're worried that they might be missing data on your pension record, you can contact NHS Pension Agency and ask them for an AA and service extract. So again, if you're worried, I would certainly do that. Have a look at it. They email it pretty much straight away. And then if you've got gaps in your record that you think there's missing certificates and we act for you, then obviously contact us and we can help kind of get that resolved. So I think for the moment, thank you to those that have had RPSSs and sent them to us. You haven't heard from us purely because we're waiting on, is your statement correct or is there an error? For those that are kind of worrying, I haven't had your statement, just make sure your pension record's up to date and they will be sent in due course.
I think it's well worth looking at the AA and service extract, because I've got quite a few clients who've, I had one client the other day who said, oh, there was something back in the 90s when they literally first were employed and they've got a whole missing year. They're not quite sure what happened, but it's well worth getting that because that will show your career income since you actually joined the.
Yeah, it's a brilliant document. It's a really good document because you can see year by year. But Kate, I've got a client again. She's got a missing year from 2007. We weren't the accountant. The accountant doesn't have a copy of the certificate. So I've sort of said to her, well, get me the partnership accounts. We'll try and do a certificate for you. But this is a problem. And it's then holding up her pension record being updated and obviously the RPSS being sent. So, yeah.
I was going to say, I've been like a hawk trying to keep up to date with the updates and just thinking about the time frame. So they're saying everyone will hear from us by the 16th of December. But we, again, this is not going to be a telephone call. This is going to be a written letter.
Yes.
So I had a client email me on Sunday, the 8th of December, with her letter that she received in the post on the 7th of December, Saturday, 7th of December. She photocopied the amended RPSS statement. I said, look, could you tell me the date on the front page? It was the 18th of November.
Yes.
So nearly 3 weeks later, it dropped through her door. So the 16th of December, taking into account Christmas post, if they're taking that long to pop into people's postboxes, we're talking about potentially mid-January that we're going to actually know if we should be starting to submit to HMRC.
Yes.
This is kind of concerning for us because we know the time frame we have, which is January. So we're doing what we can. But realistically, it does sound to me like there is going to be some significant delays. The second thing that it said on the NHS Pensions website when they announced about this date of the 16th of December is they sort of implied that there was going to be a bit of a break in the next batches that are being sent out. We know that they were always going to be sending out statements in batches and that there might not be any more batches now sent out until February, because I think they've realised that there are so many errors in the ones that they've sent. They clearly need to go back to the drawing board or do what they need to do. So I think we're going to have a big lag now.
Yes.
And I think individuals, if you are thinking, why have I not heard anything, even not an amended one, I've never had a first one, you may now not hear anything until February. And as Jen said, if you receive it, say, and it's the letter dated the 2nd of February, it doesn't need to be submitted until the 1st of May. So you've got absolutely loads of time. There's no rush on this. But I suspect from what we've seen now so far, that there are going to be big batches coming well after the January deadline.
Yeah, agreed. And it says, because you're absolutely right, Katie, when you look at the website, it says for any other member who need an RPSS but haven't received one yet, we expect to have sent the majority by the end of February 25. And I think a lot of this is for GPs particularly, we submit a pension certificate in February. They have until, I think, a cut-off date in mid-May where that information has to be processed and then sent over to NHS Pensions to get your record updated. If you've missed that mid-May point, then I don't think your record gets updated until December. So we see loads of certificates being processed in the summer, June, July, ones that get rejected and then have to be resubmitted. So I think there will be a whole host of ones that will have been updated much later. So I think you're absolutely right, Katie. Why we've seen a fraction of what we're expecting is, I think, because the records aren't up to date. Yes, pensions agency identified errors, so that probably put a stop on them issuing. And I reckon they've issued just one batch. Apparently that first batch, there was 56,000 went out. And we've seen, given how many clients we act for, we have seen a very small fraction. So it could have been loads went to hospital consultants whose records get updated in a way instantly after the year end because they're employed. And I suspect the delayed ones, unfortunately, are mainly sort of for our clients, for GPs, because you're dependent on PCSE processing your certificate and getting that submitted. And remember that if you've got a missing year, so if you're missing and PCSE have still got a query on a 1920 pension certificate, all of your years after that do not get updated to NHS pensions. And this is why we really stress to clients, you've got to get those missing ones sorted.
Well, and I wonder with that delay and this error, whether we are going to see an actual delay to the submission date, because they had pushed for an extension to that, because 31st of January was really extremely tight. And that was assuming that everyone was being sent them on the 3rd of October, which I'm not even sure they managed that in the first instance. So that'll be interesting to see whether they'll delay it sort of significantly. But we'll have to wait and see. I know that's still being pushed for, but we haven't heard anything.
I wonder whether they won't actually extend the deadline, because you've got essentially 3 months from the date of your RPSS and that is your deadline. So I wonder whether they don't want to formally say, yes, we're good. Because I think there was a push, wasn't there? Because anybody that's retired before October 23, well, you won't get an RPSS because you've got to make a choice first where you want those pension benefits, whether they're going to sit in your original scheme or the 15 scheme. So the deadline for you is actually 31st of January 27. So there's been a push to kind of go, well, shouldn't everybody have the same deadline? So yeah, but I think you're right. Why people haven't received so many, I think, is because of these errors. And they've obviously not got the system completely sorted to do the next batch.
They haven't got three wise women at NHS Pensions Agency sorting this out. Don't know how many people they've got trying to deal with it. I mean, it's so frustrating because obviously we've known this was coming for a long time.
I know, we've done so much work in preparation.
And other medical accountants will know, you know, we've worked so hard to do as much prep as we could, and we kind of knew that this was going to happen. But it's so frustrating because we want to get the work done for our clients, but we're in sort of this little loophole where we don't know whether we're coming or going because we don't know what's happening with the certificates. But yeah, as soon as you do receive your statements, do just make sure you send them in. Please try not to sit on them, because the sooner you get them in, the sooner you can process them and get them out.
Yeah, if you get a brown envelope through your door, open it. Because it's bound to be your RPSS. Don't sit on it.
RPSS or a speeding ticket, either way.
I was going to say, that a speeding ticket's coming brown envelopes. I literally, that thought went through my mind, Katie.
Well, I got over the weekend a parking notice, but in respect to my daughter.
Still terrible. Okay, well, hopefully a more upbeat Christmas podcast from us three this year than it was last year. I think it's been a good year.
I definitely think it's been a much more positive year. I think it's been positive from the fact that profits are up. It's positive about McLeod and people's pensions. They're happy that they can get 7 years a little bit earlier. So yeah, I definitely think this year's definitely been more positive. Although Casey, I said to a client, you and I talk about this quite a bit, we're always the bearer of bad news, because the positiveness of increased profits means more tax to pay. So yeah.
Especially with those rates going up.
Yes.
A pain that's now gone. For those of you who were a non-March year end, who had to change your year end this year, you'll know that you've got some pretty erratic tax bills coming up over the next few years, depending on how your profits went. So as we said at the beginning, lots of practices had dropped profits last year, then they went back up this year, and then this was the transition year. So it's really causing havoc with your tax bills. So whatever we have advised you save for your tax bills, please, 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 do put that money aside. don't wait until January 26th or January 27th. Just keep chipping it away and popping it into a savings account now. You don't want any nasty surprises to hit you in the coming years.
And if we're talking about tax, maybe we should say a present that some of our clients could give to us is get your tax return information in ASAP if you haven't.
If you haven't already and you're my client, you're getting a slap on the wrist. It's far too late to not have your tax return information. Yes, but okay, well, thank you, ladies. It was so nice to have a chat and a nice little roundup of the year. And here's to a much brighter 2025. So here's to a Merry Christmas. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, please don't forget to like and subscribe. And we will see you next year. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Merry Christmas.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.